The third of the four practices is giving up craving, an old Buddhist favourite. And Bodhidharma explains this by saying that worldly people are always craving. We're always craving, always longing, always seeking. We always want something, anything. We crave things, people, fame, fortune, love. We're always longing, always wanting. We even crave spiritual states. We try to grab dhyana, grab insight, grab enlightenment. There's always this restless craving. Maybe we get something for a while, but it passes away. Because a state of craving is so restless, it's actually painful. This is something that we need to kind of train in. Start to notice that actually craving is painful. You know, when we crave, we think we're wanting something pleasurable, but the state we're in, it's actually painful. We feel that, we feel a lack, we feel hollow. So we need to notice this, notice how painful craving is. And then when we lose what we get, that's so painful too, because we've relied on it so much. We don't even realise sometimes that we've relied on it so much, and when it's taken away, it's devastating. And then we just start craving again. We want something else, or we just crave oblivion. Just make it go away. The wise, says Bodhidharma, are always absorbed in the principle, the primordial reality. So they're utterly content. They don't crave anything. So they dwell at ease. Now, I must admit, for myself, craving is very hard to renounce. I find it very difficult to deal with craving. And I console myself with the fact that it's often, in one Buddhist text, it's said to be the hardest thing to get rid of. They say it's actually harder to get rid of than hatred in some Buddhist texts. Hatred is very serious. It's much more serious than craving, fortunately, because you're breaking your connection with living beings. But craving is much more subtle and insidious. And maybe we can begin with small things like sweets and seconds and so on. Maybe they're not so small, actually, for some of us. I'm really setting myself up for the evening meal here. I can see it. But with craving, I think it's very important that we know why. I think we have to be careful not to sort of, sometimes you get this a kind of Buddhist moralism that's a bit kind of Christian, I think, kind of creeping in, where, you know, that's craving, I can't do that, that's craving. And there's no thought, there's no intelligence as to why. We need to see how craving, we need to get a sense of how craving, it's just how restless it is, how actually painful it is, and how it disrupts contentment. And we need a feeling for contentment if we're going to actually deal with craving. We need to have a feeling for it, a sense of it, that feeling of fullness and satisfaction, that feeling that you really don't need anything. I'm sure you've all had experiences like that. That feeling of contentment, which is the fruit of creative expression. You know, maybe after a good meditation where you feel content because you've really worked in the practice. You might not necessarily have had a wonderful experience, but you've worked intelligently in the practice and with awareness, and you've kept that going for a good amount of time. And you think, well, yes, I feel content because I really put forward effort intelligently. Or, you know, you just do good deeds. You're just really generous to somebody, and then you feel very content because of what you've done. Not smug, but just content because you've done a really good thing. Or aesthetic experience. You know, you've something you've been making or writing or whatever it may be, or something you've been watching or listening to. And there's that sense of contentment and satisfaction. Or sometimes at the end of a puja, it could be that wonderful feeling of contentment, which is really sort of thrilling and alive in that silence. Well, in those states, there's an absence of craving. You know, you're not restless. So we need to recall those feelings of contentment and realise how pleasurable they are. The Buddha in the Dhammapada, it's interesting, I remembered this the other day. It just sort of popped up, this particular line, and I sort of reflect on it quite a lot. The Buddha speaks in the Dhammapada of cutting off craving. Actually, a more literal translation of the word is sticky affection. But let's say craving. Cutting off craving. One might cut it off as one plucks the bright autumnal lotus. You cut off craving just like picking a beautiful lotus flower. So cutting craving here is described as an intensely pleasurable and aesthetic experience, not something really heavy and harsh. It should be like picking hold of a beautiful flower. Remove craving and you harmonize with the true nature. You become intimate with things. Sangharakshita relates the removal of craving and the development of wisdom, and he connects this with metta in a brilliant passage in Wisdom Beyond Words, in his commentary on the perfection of wisdom in 8,000 lines. He discusses a whole topic called the greater mandala of aesthetic appreciation, or the greater mandala of uselessness. And he told a very simple story to help illustrate it. He talked about how when he was in Kalimpong walking with a Nepalese friend, and they came across a magnificent pine just looming up along the path, a really, really beautiful tree. And Sangharakshita said, "What a beautiful tree." And his friend said, "Yes, that will keep us in firewood for the whole winter." And, you know, Bhante was making the point, well, you know, he was seeing the tree as something in itself. It's useless. It's not, you don't do something in it with it. You see it aesthetically as it is in itself. You're closer to it. You're intimate with it. You love it. And so you can see how wisdom and aesthetic appreciation and absence of craving link up there. While his friend was seeing it in terms of utility, what you could do with it for you and for other people. So instead of craving, we can develop this aesthetic appreciation.